This is Stan Bennett in Washington, D.C. Today on Jay Sekulow Live, the United States responds to Iranian threats.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Stan Bennett.
Hey everybody, welcome into Jay Sekulow Live. Stan Bennett with you today. I'll be joined here momentarily by the rest of our team, and our phone lines are open for you. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We've got a number of issues that we're going to get to today, folks. We're going to give you an update a little bit later in the broadcast on the news out of the House Judiciary Committee from yesterday involving the White House's assertion of executive privilege over the special counsel's report after the negotiations broke down between the Department of Defense and the committee's chairman. We're going to talk about that assertion. We're going to talk about the fact that the committee voted to hold the attorney general in contempt of Congress. We will talk about what that means and what happens going forward on that issue. We're also going to discuss in the third segment of the broadcast some important news coming out of the Department of Health and Human Services. This is an issue that the ACLJ has been heavily involved in, involving protecting the rights of conscience for healthcare providers, for recipients of HHS grants. So we will bring that important update to you. We're also going to give you an update about the effort to confirm federal judges, nominees from President Trump to the federal courts. The United States Senate has taken some important strides to increase the pace at which those confirmations are happening. So we are going to give you that update. But we're going to start today with an update on the news we talked with you about yesterday out of Iran. We told you that Iran was demanding that the remaining European powers who were still inside the infamous Iranian deal, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, that Iran was demanding that they renegotiate the terms of that deal. And they had issued Iran had issued an ultimatum giving those remaining countries 60 days with which to renegotiate the terms. Essentially, Iran was walking away from even the figment of compliance that they had been operating under. And it was clear to me when we saw that announcement that the impact of the U.S. sanctions on the Iranian economy was cratering their economy, that they were desperate. They were desperate for relief from those sanctions, so they were looking to the European powers for relief. And we know from the beginning that Iran wasn't going to comply, but we also told you that it was only a matter of time before the European powers had to choose their relationship with the United States over their desire to do business with Iran. There was just no competing between the two. And Professor Harry Hutchison, Director of Policy at the ACLJ, this is something that you've looked at very closely. It was clear that these powers would have to choose the United States. Now it is clear they are choosing the United States. The response from a number of those powers is we will not respond to ultimatums out of Iran, and it looks like they will not renegotiate the terms. Professor Hutchison, to me, it looks like the Iran deal is dead.
I think that's correct. So Iran has already been reeling under intense U.S. economic pressure in terms of our maximum pressure sanctions campaign. And now in response to the new Iranian threats, the U.S. has imposed additional sanctions which affect 10% of the Iranian economy, which is already cratering. So I think the Iranian approach will indeed backfire. They will not be able to force the Europeans to give them more money to stay in a bad nuclear deal. And so their only choice or their only recourse is to try to seek additional funding from China and Russia, and both of those countries have their own problems.
And folks, you see the United States again leading from a position of strength. We deployed the aircraft carrier, the USS Abraham Lincoln, to the region this week in response to provocations from Iran. Now you see the additional sanctions layering on. This is what forced Iran to the table in the first place. Of course, the last administration then let them off the hook. We'll dig into some of these details after the break, but we want you to be a part of the broadcast. 1-800-684-3110. We're going to start with Iran, but we've got a lot of issues to hit today. So call in on any topic. We will get to those calls again. 1-800-684-3110. We'll be back after this.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Than Bennett with you. We're talking about the news that broke yesterday that the European powers that remained in the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA, better known as the Iran deal, are responding to the Iranian ultimatum that the deal be renegotiated. Of course, we told you about a year ago when President Trump withdrew the United States from the deal that that was essentially spelling the end of the deal because there was no way that the European powers could provide the incentive for Iran to stay in the deal, even if Iran had been genuine in the first place about complying. But Iran was threatening those remaining powers, was saying, you have to renegotiate the terms. You have to allow us to break the limits of enrichment and storage capacity that were in the original deal. Never mind that they were inspecting their own facilities, but you have to renegotiate those terms if we are going to comply. And by the way, we are insisting that you renegotiate those that deal within 60 days. Well, the European powers have responded. The EU, the United Kingdom, France, and Germany all noted, quote, great concern, and also said that they would not respond to ultimatums from Iran. Andy, Professor Andy Economo, senior counsel with the ACLJ, former U.S. attorney. I read that news yesterday, and I thought two things. First of all, I think it was a clear sign that the Iranian economy was cratering, that it was suffering under the reimposition of the U.S. sanctions. And I saw it, secondly, as a sign of desperation from Iran trying to save any figment of world reputation by issuing this ultimatum to European powers. But, Andy, the European response spoke pretty clearly. They are not going to pander to the Iranian demands. They are not going to compromise a relationship with the United States in response to these demands.
It appears not, Than. I was somewhat surprised by the response of the European nations because I don't have great confidence in their backbone and whether they've got the steel in their spine to back us, the United States, that is, in seeing that these sanctions against the Iranians are imposed and that they stick. But apparently, based upon the ultimatum that was given, and saying that unless you lighten up on us, we're going to continue the enrichment of uranium and of heavy water. I was very pleased to see the Foreign Secretary of the United Kingdom, Jeremy Hunt, standing next to our Secretary of State, Pompeo, and saying that if the Iranians think that the Europeans are going to crumble to their demands in this 60-day ultimatum, they are wrong. He says then there will be consequences in terms of how European powers react. So we urge the Iranians to think very long and hard. We strongly urge them to reconsider what they said in their letter. That gives me a good feeling, at least about the UK, and I hope that the other European powers who are ostensibly our allies, although, you know, I'm not always sure about the French or the Germans for that matter, stand up to these ridiculous demands that are being made by the Iranians.
Andy, I'm actually glad that you mentioned that you were a little surprised about this, because I do think we need to issue viewers and listeners a warning that I do think there will probably be some back and forth between Iran and these powers. Look, these powers were disappointed that the United States had walked away from the deal. They did not want the United States to walk away from the deal. They have been too trusting of Iran to inspect their own facilities. And I believe they will be looking for an opportunity to try to excuse that behavior. But here's what I found so important about this, and I want to go back to Professor Hutchison on this, because I think there was a clear signal that they understand they have to satisfy the demands of the United States. They recognize that the sanctions being reimposed by the United States on Iran are having a very punitive impact, and they want to make sure they stay in the good graces of the United States. So I think this initial response was an indication, Professor Hutchison, that the economic leverage carried by the United States dwarfs that of all the other European powers put together. I do think Andy's correct. We will probably have moments going forward where their resolve is not quite as strong. But out of the gate, Professor Hutchison, to me, this is a sign that the economic power of the United States is on full display.
I think you're precisely correct, Than. I think the Iranians were counting on European irrationality, that the Europeans would be prepared to give up a trading relationship with the United States, which exceeds something like $700 billion, in exchange for dealing with the Iranian economy and perhaps a trade relationship that amounts to $20 billion. In addition, I think the Iranians believe very, very strongly in their ability to blackmail the Europeans. After all, the Iranians negotiated a very bad deal from the perspective of the West, a very bad Iranian nuclear deal, which simply gave the Iranians most of what they wanted in exchange for promises not to build a nuclear weapon. And it's very, very likely that Iran has continued to make progress in building a nuclear weapon, while we in the West have given them access to our economies, and the United States sent the Iranians billions of dollars. But President Trump is a new sheriff, and he has demanded a compliance, and he has found that the Iranians were not in compliance with the deal, and therefore the United States has correctly pulled out, and we have placed pressure not only on the Iranians, but also on the Europeans. And so I think the moment has come for the Europeans to decide, will they back Iran or will they continue to deal with the United States? I think they will make the rational decision at the end of the day, but it's also important to keep in mind that many Europeans are driven by what might be called a globalist agenda. Oh, we can have peace and we can have our trading relationship with the United States. I think the Trump administration is sending signals today that will not happen. How is the Trump administration doing that? By sending an aircraft carrier to the Middle East in response to Iranian threats, and secondarily by imposing additional sanctions on 10% of the Iranian export economy with respect to the metals industry.
There's an additional component to this that led to the run-up. It was the saber-rattling of Iran and some information that we got from Israel. We actually have a call coming in about the threats that Iran has been making to the United States, and it leads right into something that I wanted to bring up. So let's go to that call. It's Robert calling from Maryland on line one. Robert, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi, Dan. Hi, Harry. Hi, Andy. I wanted to ask all three of you, what are the specific threats that Iranian mullahs have made toward the United States? Are they just purely military threats, but are they also military threats, economic threats, and also cybersecurity threats as well?
Yeah, it's a great question, Robert. And the truth is that even in public, all three of the threats that you mentioned are made regularly. The United States is, of course, the great Satan. Israel is the little Satan, and they will make those threats in public. However, Andy, there was news earlier this week that really led up to the sort of escalation between the United States and Iran. I don't know if escalation is the right word, but at least the defensive deployment of the USS Abraham Lincoln, as well as the reimposition of sanctions. And it was intelligence that we received from our closest ally in the region, Israel. And Andy, to me, it is the most specific reiteration of why it is so important that the United States relationship with Israel is so strong. We need the intelligence that the Israelis can provide to us to properly respond to Iran's saber rattling.
Well, that's exactly right, Than. The Israelis have a phenomenal intelligence apparatus. I mean, it's second to none in the world, and their ability to get information with respect to what's going on in Iran and other places is beyond description. And they warned us that there was something happening with the Iranians that needed American attention forthwith. And what I am pleased with is the reaction of the President of the United States, Donald Trump. He immediately sends the USS Abraham Lincoln. He immediately sends a flotilla of military vessels to the Middle East to show the Iranians that we are very serious about protecting the access that we have through the Persian Gulf, the Straits of Hormuz, and so forth. In other words, don't mess with the United States. We're going to take action. This is so different from the policies that we saw under Obama, who gave away, what, $1 billion? To the Iranians, you know, as part of this so-called joint comprehensive deal, and made the United States the weakling of the world, leading from behind, not being the power that we really are. And I think that that is just something that is a tremendous show of force by the United States that impresses the Iranians. Because let me tell you, when it's all said and done, the only thing those people understand is the use of force. Nothing else but the use of force. Historically, that's their mentality, and it's not going to change in the year 2019. It's always been that way.
Yeah, the last administration cozied up to our enemies and walked away from our strongest ally in the region. The actions taken by this administration, you know, highlighted by the move of the embassy to Jerusalem, but on down the line, especially on display at the United Nations, it's been on full display this week, the importance of that alliance that the United States has with Israel. We are grateful for it. After this break, folks, an important update on a rule out of the Department of Health and Human Services.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.
Everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Than Bennett with you out of Washington, D.C. We talk a lot on this broadcast about how the ACLJ engages in work behind the scenes on the regulatory front. This is something that doesn't get a lot of headlines. You won't see it in the news a lot of times. But many of the acts of Congress, the federal statutes, are enforced through regulation through the various agencies of the federal government. And many times, the intent of the statute, the intent of the law, is not properly enforced by those agencies. And it changes often from administration to administration. One of those areas where there often seems to be a gap between what the statute requires and what the regulation actually issues is in the area of life, protecting the unborn, and also in the issue of religious freedom. And when President Trump took office, one of the first things that his administration did is issue an executive order. It actually came out on May 4th, 2017, instructing the various agencies to do a review of their regulations and make sure that free speech and religious liberty were being properly protected. Let me just read to you a couple of lines from that executive order. It said, "By the authority vested in me as president, by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, then Section 1, it shall be the policy of the executive branch to vigorously enforce federal law's robust protections for religious freedom." And then Section 3 of that executive order was about conscience protections with respect to preventative care mandate. Folks, that sounds very complicated, but let me just break it down for you just a little bit, because that was followed up by a rule that was issued by the Department of Health and Human Services in January of 2018 that would protect the conscious rights of healthcare providers. So if you are a recipient of grants from the Department of Health and Human Services, you cannot be forced to violate your conscience. You cannot be forced to participate in, say, abortion or sterilization or anything else that falls under this mandate. That rule was issued in January of 2018. In March of 2018, the ACLJ filed comments. I'm holding them in my hands, filed legal comments justifying or arguing for in the defense of that rule. There are several statutes, the Church Amendments, the Coach Snow Amendments, the Weldon Amendments, all of which require this type of protection. Our comments from the ACLJ argued that this new proposed rule in defense of religious freedom was indeed sound, should indeed be implemented. And just last week, that rule, after that long process, folks, we tell you this a lot. You've got to follow these regulatory processes all the way through. The ACLJ did that. You stood with us, signed our petition. That rule was made final, and it will be implemented in just about 60 days, an important protection for free speech and religious freedom. And I wanted to go to Professor Hutchison on this because, Professor, this has been statute. It has been law for quite some time, but it has not been properly implemented. And two of the things that I like the most about this rule out of the Department of Health and Human Services is it requires that someone who is applying for a grant certify in advance that they will comply with these conscience protections. And if there's a violation, it also says that the department will follow up to enforce those requirements.
I think that's precisely correct. So we've had laws and we've had rules designed to protect the conscience of healthcare providers with respect to abortion, sterilization, and assisted suicide. However, those rules, those laws have essentially been honored in the breach up until now. And so the Trump administration has taken affirmative action, A, to implement the law and the rules, and also to enforce. And so institutions which seek funding must certify compliance, and their failure to comply after certification, for instance, will result in investigations designed to enforce the rules. And so it's important to note that this rule produced by the HHS, the so-called final rule, implements robust enforcement tools to protect conscience rights, including authority to investigate complaints, initiate compliance reviews, conduct investigations, supervise compliance within HHS, and make enforcement referrals to the Department of Justice. This rule requires certain recipients of federal funds from the HHS to submit assurance and certification to HHS, and that they are indeed in compliance with the federal conscience laws, and to fully comply with the requirements of such laws, and to keep records of such compliance. So I think this is a very, very important step forward. I think the American people strongly support this initiative, and I think only individuals like Governor Northam of Virginia, who supported radical abortion laws, would probably oppose such legislation.
Now, let me break this down just a little bit more, because, folks, this is where your involvement with the ACLJ is so important, because when a statute like this and a program that's going to be run out of the Department of Health and Human Services passes through Congress, very often very sound protections for conscience, protections for life are included, because, quite frankly, that's where the American people, the majority of them, stand, and members of Congress want to demonstrate that they are in step with their voters. So the language that passes in a statute is often very sound. But oftentimes, when it comes to implementation through these agencies, it gets out of step with the statute. And unless you join with groups like ours, you join with the ACLJ and point out those discrepancies and actually engage in the nitty-gritty work, the legal work of filing comments in support of good rules like this one issued by the Trump administration, those inconsistencies can last for decades. We had another rule out of the Department of Health and Human Services that flew directly in the face of a requirement that was issued for the Title 10 program, which said that funds that go to the Title 10 program may not be used to fund agencies, to fund groups that perform or promote abortion. For decades, that was actually implemented exactly the opposite, and recipients of those grants were actually required to refer for abortion. So when we go in and we file comments, we go back to the statute, we encourage the agency to comply with the requirements of the statute, but oftentimes, folks, we also come to you and ask that you submit your own comments, because there are tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of comments that will be made on these rules. And when an administration wants to do the right thing and stand up for religious freedom or stand up for life, it is very helpful when tens of thousands of Americans, ACLJ members, stand behind them. Andy, I would just go to you on this political point. In the United States of America, we have the wonderful freedom of exercising participation in our way of government. And we at the ACLJ try to facilitate that nexus. But we need our members to step up when we give them the opportunity and take that opportunity. It results in big wins like this one.
It desperately does require the participation of ACLJ members. We have for decades and decades supported the right of religious freedom and of conscience. And these fact sheet that I read today on the final conscience regulations is the product of the ACLJ members who support us, supporting with their comments and with their support and backing, so that the religious beliefs and moral convictions of people are not trampled upon by the government. And areas such as Harry pointed out, abortion, sterilization, or assisted suicide. So it's vital for our members to continue to support us and to be with us in all these initiatives that we have instituted and that we follow.
Folks, I can't tell you how important that participation is, and we'd also like your participation in the second half of the broadcast. If you want to be on the air, 1-800-684-3110. I see calls coming in now. We're going to get to those. Also going to update you on the contempt proceedings that took place in the House Judiciary Committee yesterday. We'll be back right after this.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.
Fight for the right to live in freedom. Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
And now your host, Than Bennett.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Than Bennett with you. I want to move now to update an issue that we talked with you about yesterday. And this was the House Judiciary Committee's hearing. It was actually a markup. A markup is when you take a piece of legislation or a resolution, you consider it, you amend it, and then you vote on it. They were marking up yesterday a contempt resolution to hold the Attorney General of the United States, Bill Barr, in contempt of Congress for, quote-unquote, failing to comply with the request of Congress as they pertain to the special counsel's report. And I want to do something for those of you who are watching on Facebook and Periscope. I'm going to put up a graphic now for you to take a look at. This is an infographic that was compiled by the Wall Street Journal, which is all of the pages of the special counsel's report on one image. And you can see on that image the redactions that took place for any number of reasons, whether it was grand jury information, which is required by law to be redacted, or protecting sources and methods or ongoing investigations or the privacy of third parties. But the reason I'm putting this graphic up is because the redactions were incredibly light, even at that level. It was very clear to anyone who took the time to read this report what the conclusion of the special counsel was, and it was that there had been no collusion and that there was no obstruction of justice, and the report was made available for all of the public to see. And this is something that I don't think got reported that much. There was a version that had virtually all of those redactions removed that was made available to members of Congress as well. The only information that was held was what is known as 6E material, grand jury material. And I'm going to go to Andy, former U.S. attorney, to explain to us what 6E material is. And Andy, my understanding, based on talking to you about this, is withholding, dissemination of that 6E material would have been a criminal offense. And a member of Congress had the opportunity to view this report in its entirety with only that 6E material redacted.
That's right. It would have been a crime. Look, the federal rules of Criminal Procedure Rule 6E says that documents that have been subpoenaed before and by a federal grand jury, or the testimony of people who have appeared and testified before a federal grand jury, are secret and shall not be disclosed. That's part of the grand jury's accusatory and investigatory process. And innocent people could be implicated. People who did nothing wrong could be found to have their characters besmirched because there's something that was leaked or let out because of a violation of Rule 6E. And what the Attorney General and the Department of Justice did, and you can see by looking at this graphic that you pointed out, is they went through and took out anything that Mueller and his group of 13 prosecutors had obtained through the grand jury process. And this they were supposed to and obligated to do under the law. I'm sorry that the Democrats don't like what the law is. I'm sorry that they disagree with Rule 6E of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure. Get the Supreme Court to amend it. Have Congress change it. But that happens to be what the law is right now. And Attorney General Barr redacted those portions, that is, blacked them out so you can't see them, and said that you cannot have those, presented the report, and that's what this whole argument is about. It's really not, Than, it's really not the redaction. They want something to complain about, so they say you redacted what, and we should have it. No, you shouldn't have it. I wonder whether they shouldn't even have the whole report, because that was an internal memorandum of the Justice Department prepared by an employee of the Justice Department, Mueller and his team. So this whole thing is politically motivated and is nothing but theater and drama.
Well, the proof of that is that Chairman Nadler has admitted that he has not availed himself of the report that was made available to him without those redactions. In other words, he has not read it. So he is not after access to information. He is after a political stunt. I'm convinced of it. Here was the DOJ's part of their response. It said the Attorney General could not comply with the House Judiciary Committee's subpoena without violating the law, court rules, and court orders. No one, including Chairman Nadler and his committee, will force the Department of Justice to break the law. And yet, folks, the committee held the Attorney General in contempt on a party-line vote yesterday. We will explain to you what that means and what it means going forward after the break. But if you want to weigh in on this topic, I encourage you to call in now, 1-800-684-3110. Your calls are going to be a part of the program after this break in the next segment, 1-800-684-3110.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. I know a lot of you were probably following yesterday's proceedings in the House Judiciary Committee, or at least some of you would. I'd like to think maybe a lot of you were. I was following them, I'll tell you that. But I think there was probably some confusion coming out of exactly what took place. The markup was 6 hours long before they held this vote on the contempt resolution for the Attorney General. And I wanted to take just a minute to maybe explain a little bit what happened yesterday and then also what will happen moving forward. But I wanted to set that up by taking Carla's call, because Carla had a question about what was happening yesterday during the markup, and I thought it would be a good lead into this conversation. Carla, she's calling from Colorado on line three. Carla, you're on the air. Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Thank you. Yes, I agree with your assessment of what was going on yesterday, and I was watching the hearings. But my question is, at the end of a Republican speaking, a Democrat would ask to be recognized and then say, strike the last word. And then when a Democrat spoke, a Republican would ask to be recognized and say, strike the last word. What was that all about?
So it's always fun for me to get to talk a little parliamentary procedure here on Jay Sekulow Live. Don't get a lot of opportunities to do it, but let me explain it this way. What was happening yesterday in the House Judiciary Committee was they were actually marking up a resolution. That means considering a resolution, and they had an opportunity to amend it. Now, in this case, the resolution was a resolution to hold the Attorney General of the United States in contempt. And any member of the committee, theoretically, could amend that resolution. But none of the members really had an amendment to the resolution, but they all wanted to speak on it. So what they would do is they would ask the chairman for permission to strike the last word. Technically, that meant they were offering to delete the last word of the underlying amendment to the resolution. But what they were really doing is just accessing their 5 minutes of debate time to speak on the resolution. So technically, they were offering a pro forma amendment. They were offering an amendment with nothing in it, and they just wanted the opportunity to speak on it. But let me go to Harry Hutchison on this, Professor Hutchison, for just a minute, because, Harry, I actually think Carla's question underscores the precise point here. Every member of this committee wanted the opportunity to speak on the contempt citation, but there wasn't actually a substantive debate about the underlying report taking place. There was just a political game to speak to the cameras, to attack the president, to attack the attorney general, and to score political points. So Carla's point, Harry, actually underscores the fact that this was just political theater.
I think you're precisely right. And so I think what we are suggesting here is that yesterday's hearing and vote was A, all political theater, and that's number one, and number two, it represented nothing but empty air. So, in essence, the Dems sought to hold Attorney General Barr in contempt, in part because they wanted to continue this media game while the cameras were rolling. That's number one. Number two, they don't necessarily want to read the entire report themselves. They want to force the Attorney General to release the entire report so that the mainstream media can read the report and release selected information from, let's say, the redacted portions of the report to damage the president and to damage Attorney General Barr. I think it's important to note, by way of background, that the House Democrats really fear what is going on in the Justice Department right now under the justice under Attorney General Barr. Inspector General Michael Horowitz is prepared to release an IG report which will disclose information about the origins of the so-called Russia collusion inquiry. And it's important to note there, parenthetically, that there was no collusion found, no conspiracy found, no obstruction of justice found. So what was the origin of this investigation? Number two, Attorney General Barr is prepared to investigate the origin of the spying campaign that went on against then-candidate Trump by the Obama administration. This will put a number of Democrats and Democratic operatives in the crosshairs. So one of the ways of damaging Attorney General Barr's report and the Inspector General's report is by attempting to besmirch the reputation of Attorney General Barr. So in many respects, this was all preemptive theater, all kabuki theater designed to damage Attorney General Barr and to damage the president.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I want to ask Andy about enforcement of this contempt citation, should the House of Representatives take it up in the near future. But first, to underscore the point that Harry was just making, I want to play a piece of sound from the chairman of the committee, Jerry Nadler. This is bite number two. At a press conference immediately following the markup of this resolution, here is what Chairman Nadler had to say about why he pursued this contempt citation and what he had hoped to achieve out of passing it. Again, Chairman Jerry Nadler, bite number two.
They have decided to oppose the role of Congress as a coordinate branch of government representing the American people. They are stonewalling the American people from all information. And this cannot be. We cannot have a government where all the information is in the executive branch, where the American people and the Congress are stonewalled as the information that they need to make decisions and to know what's going on.
So stonewalling the American people and stonewalling members of Congress, I'm going to take those one at a time, and then I want to go to Andy about enforcement of this citation. First of all, stonewalling the American people. Maybe we can put back up the infographic we talked about earlier, the version of the special counsel's report that is available for any member of the American public to read. Any member can read this report with very minimal redactions, and the redactions that have taken place, our viewers on Facebook and Periscope are looking at it now, are there so that the innocent are protected by and large. This is grand jury information, information that was supposed to be secret, that is a violation of federal law to release, and that Congress cannot insist on it being released. Secondly, he said that they are trying to stonewall Congress. He says that even though a version of the report that has even fewer redactions, the only redactions that are in there are the ones that are prohibited by law, is available to the chairman to read, and he has not yet done so. In fact, not a single member, according to reports this morning, not a single member of Chairman Nadler's party has availed themselves of the version of the report that the Department of Justice has made available to them to read it in an unredacted form, except for those redactions that are related to grand jury information the Department of Justice cannot release. So stonewalling Congress, I guess it's only stonewalling if you are voluntarily not reading that report. But Andy, I want to come to you quickly about enforcement of the contempt citation, because I think one of the questions on people's minds is, if the House of Representatives does hold the Attorney General in contempt, How can that contempt citation be enforced? And I would there are really three options. I would maybe take the first. The first is what is known as inherent contempt. Theoretically, the House of Representatives could arrest and detain in the House jail the Attorney General of the United States. I can tell you right now that is not going to happen. Hasn't happened for almost a century. It is not the practice of the United States. But I want to come to you on the other two options that would be available to the House of Representatives. The first would be that they could ask the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia to bring criminal charges. So they could essentially ask the Trump administration to bring charges against their Attorney General. In your opinion, Andy, is that an option that the Trump administration is going to consider?
It is not an option. It isn't going to happen. When the Congress held that corrupt Attorney General Eric Holder in contempt, and in a correct finding of contempt, because he should have been held in contempt, his case, the criminal contempt, was referred to the Obama Justice Department and the then U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia, who was a Democrat. Did he prosecute Eric Holder? No way on earth. And the same thing is going to happen here. If the Congress decides to pursue a course of criminal contempt against William Barr, which would be an outrage because the man did nothing contumacious, nothing that was in contempt of anybody. He gave a document that he was not obligated to give any part of to the Congress. But if they were to refer that to the Justice Department and the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia, no way on earth that the U.S. Attorney for Washington, D.C. is going to prosecute him for contempt. It's just not going to happen.
I agree with that. I would underscore the Attorney General provided far more than he was entitled to under the law. This report was actually his work product that he did not have to release. Third, Andy, just quickly, they could also bring civil action to try to get a court order for compliance. Just quickly, how likely is that in your mind?
Well, I mean, they could. They could bring the House of Representatives, could bring a civil action against the Attorney General in a federal district court in Washington, D.C. to find him in civil contempt, which means that you are you're locked up until you give up the documents that they're seeking or the information that they're wanting. That could take a long time to litigate, years past the 2020 election, in my opinion, because it could theoretically go to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, folks, I think substantively this is the end of the line. There will be more noise, but substantively this is the end of the process. Look, in the last segment of the broadcast, got a couple of updates. I want to bring you some breaking news out of North Korea, also an update on judicial nominations, but I want to take your phone calls as well on any of these topics or any others. 1-800-684-3110 to be a part of the broadcast. Again, 1-800-684-3110. Your calls after this.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the broadcast. I do have a bit of breaking news that I want to bring to you quickly before we go to your phone calls. I do want to try to take all the calls that are coming in, but there is breaking news out of North Korea that apparently the United States has seized a North Korean ship for reason of violating U.S. sanctions. And I just want to quickly go to Professor Hutchison. This is new information. We don't have a lot of details on this yet, Harry. But to me, the biggest takeaway is that the United States under this president, under this administration, is very serious about imposing the sanctions that it puts in place. These are not just words put on paper. Sanctions that are in place are going to be enforced. And just to tie it to the news out of Iran, I think Iran would do well to understand that the United States is serious about its sanctions as well. But I know you're just receiving this news as well. What's your takeaway from this breaking news?
Well, I think your analysis is correct, number one. But number two, I think the maximum pressure campaign introduced by the Trump administration is working. And this seizure of the North Korean vessel, the Wise Honest, sends a direct and unmistakable signal to Iran. But it also sends a signal to each and every enemy of the United States. We will indeed enforce the sanctions regime, irrespective of the fact that the dear leader of North Korea and President Trump have engaged in talks. Those talks may indeed continue. But meanwhile, U.S. sanctions on North Korea will continue until the North Koreans agree to denuclearize the peninsula. Until that happens, these sanctions are in place. They should remain in place, and the United States should continue to take aggressive action to enforce them.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think this principle of tough negotiations is true, whether you're talking about Iran or China or North Korea. This president wants to engage in talks. He wants to reach peaceful agreements, whether it's on economic terms or military terms. But he's not going to lay down in the process and get a bad deal. He's going to keep the pressure on. He's going to expect the other side of negotiations to come through with their side of the deal. Otherwise, there will be punitive ramifications. And I think it's true in all three of those situations. Okay, I do want to get to an update on judicial nominees quickly, but we do have phone calls coming in. I want to take each of those. Let's go first to Raj calling from Virginia on line one. Raj, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
When the going gets tough, the tough get going. And we say all thanks to God for our president and what he's doing. But thank you. You have brought to notice many ways in which we can be involved, when we can engage, not just the HHS final rule, but also in matters of North Korea and Iran. And I would add to that is a quick postscript about what's happening in Venezuela. It's tough, but you've got to stay the course there. And it is we, the people, who are speaking through all the things you have provided so effectively, and I thank the Lord for each one of you, is allowing us to engage.
And engage. I appreciate that, Raj. And I would just tell you that I know you've been a faithful member of the ACLJ, a frequent caller to the broadcast. You have been helpful on many of these issues. And that final rule out of the Department of Health and Human Services, we're going to need you to stand with us on that as well. Just yesterday, the Appropriations Committee in the House passed a bill to overturn that rule. They also passed a rule to block implementation of the Title 10 rule that came out of HHS. So we will need you to stay involved on that issue, no doubt. We're grateful that you have in the past. We're going to need you to in the future as well. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Diane calling from Florida on line two. Diane, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm sure that everybody is getting frustrated with this nonsense that's going on. So what is it going to take, Democrat-wise, Republican-wise, to get this to stop? I mean, it's ridiculous.
Look, I would respond in this way. I think this is one of the beauties of living in the United States of America, that ultimately voters have the power. This is not a partisan statement, whether you're Democrat, Republican, independent, or otherwise. If your federally elected officials are not solving the problems that you send them to Washington, D.C. to solve, and I would suggest that right now, probably the biggest one is the border security crisis at our southern border. It is a national security crisis, and we know that those who are committing terror around the world are seeking to expose it. If they're not solving that problem in a way that makes sense to you, you should not send them back to Washington, D.C. It's as simple as that. And ultimately, I think a response at the ballot box to members of Congress of any party who are not actually solving problems, that's what it will take to send the message that the games that you're seeing out of Washington, D.C. Have to stop. Ultimately, the voters have the power. Quickly, let's go to Madonna calling from Georgia on line three. Madonna, you're on the air.
Hi, and I enjoy listening to you being the MC today. You're doing a great job, Sam. My comment is that wouldn't it have just been easier for the Attorney General to go on and appear last Friday?
Yeah, it's a great question, Madonna, and I'll get Andy's input on this too. But I think what a lot of people don't realize is the day before he was scheduled to appear before the House Judiciary Committee, he appeared and gave hours of testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee. He was willing to appear, and in fact, he was scheduled to appear at the House Judiciary Committee. It was only because of the insistence of Chairman Nadler that he break the law and provide a version of the report that would violate the law and provide that grand jury information, that they had this loggerheads. The Attorney General was willing to come testify, and Andy, he had in fact just testified the day before in the United States Senate. This was about a political game. The contempt wasn't even about him not showing up. It was about him not providing that report that would have broken the law to provide.
That's right. And to answer Madonna's question, it would not be easier for him to appear and to answer more questions, because the questions from the House Judiciary Committee, Nadler and the Democrats, are never ending and have no legitimate purpose. Now, what they wanted, and this is what you may not know, is they didn't want just the members of the committee who elected to Congress to question the Attorney General. They wanted staffers who were lawyers, 27, 28-year-old staffers, to question the Attorney General of the United States, confirmed by the Senate. And the Attorney General said, I'm not going to have some young kid who's just gotten out of law school, who's prepped himself up and wants to make a political career in one particular party, questioning me with respect to this report. If members of Congress want to question me, that's fine, but I'm not going to go for the alternative. So the answer really is nothing satisfies them. You have to understand that. This is not a question of trying to get legitimate information. I heard Hank Johnson, who unfortunately is a congressman from Georgia, an embarrassment to me and to all Georgians, who says, how can we impeach you if we can't see the redacted portions? In other words, he's got an agenda. I want to impeach the President of the United States or the Attorney General, and you got to give me illegally the information to do it. Well, guess what? It's not going to happen from this administration.
Yeah, there was a clear agenda. Look, folks, I want to close the broadcast. We ran out of time to really get into this, but I want to close it on a good note. David Fonseca and R.R. Schopp does a very good job following judicial nominations. The United States Senate has broken a record for the first term of a president, confirming 103 federal judges, including 38 circuit court judges, two justices to the Supreme Court of the United States. There are 69 more pending. Quite frankly, the pace needs to improve, but the federal judiciary is changing under this president. Four nominees to the Ninth Circuit have been confirmed. An additional three are now pending before the United States Senate. We'll get into this more tomorrow, because this is an important issue that we didn't have a lot of chance to get to. I know it's important to members of the ACLJ. You can find more information at our website, aclj.org, and we'll get into more details tomorrow.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.